Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's February 25th, 2011, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott the Rat Long.
You're such a rat.
I am. Hey, you're a dog.
I'm a dog, you're a rat. if this was a mafia, you'd be dead.
Yeah.
Always kill the rat.
For lots of reasons, I'd be dead.
Well, that's true, but they mostly do it for being a rat.
Mostly because I don't know how to order Italian food, so just point of picture. So.
You know, that's true. You really don't know how to order it. It makes you funny. Between all juice and your Italian food ordering, I don't think we can ever actually have a decent meal.
Well, you know, that's why I go to Chinese buffets.
That's right.
Because I don't have to worry about ordering. I just go up there and scoop.
That's right.
And move. And, you know, we were down in Palm Beach, West Palm Beach this week for the circuit event. We're going to talk a lot about that later on in the show. But when we're down there, we always hang out with our good friend Antonio Pinzari, host of Poker Wars on the radio show on Monday night that we're always a part of. And we like to go in the studio when we're down there, put the cans on. Act like we're professional broadcasters.
Of course, you get the cans. I didn't get any cans this time.
Yes, yes, and that was entirely humorous.
Go back and listen to the archives. It was pretty funny.
It's about the only thing I have to hang my hat on this trip. But we're always down there. Antonio likes to take us to the creatively named Hong Kong Cafe.
Yeah.
For our pre-radio show meal. And while we were there this time, you know, we looked down, and just like most 10-year-olds at the Chinese buffet, we spend a lot of time reading the little placemats provided there by the management. Of course, you know, the Chinese people have these years, you know, and they attach animals to them, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, you start out, you're like, hey, Scott, what year were you born? I'm like, 72. I'll save you the point, the time. I'm a rat. So then I know you were born in the 70s. I'm like, ha, you're a dog.
I'm a dog.
Of course, you know, like little 13-year-old girls, we giggle. Isn't that funny? We're poker players, and I'm a rat, and you're a dog. But beyond that, I thought this was very telling. And this was the day before we played in the World Series circuit event, the horse event. You know, we're reading the descriptions. And, you know, Chris, you're a dog, right?
I'm a dog.
And the little description said, among other things, dogs look to the horse. So I move over to the rat, and I'm like, I wonder what it says about me. You know, probably good looking, smart, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
right? But a rat, least compatible with horse. So wouldn't you know it? It wasn't the fortune cookie, of which I had 6 of them because you don't like them. It wasn't the fortune cookie that portended the future of this trip, Chris. It was the placemat. Because the very next day we enter the World Series of Poker Circuit event, horse, I'm out in 150th place or something like that. You go on to cash, finish 13th out of 173 runners. Congratulations, buddy. Obviously, being a dog, you should look to the horse.
Can you imagine the size of the fortune cookie it would take to stuff that menu in there?
I don't know, but I would love to try to eat
it. I'm sure
that.
You would love to dive into that, man. Hey, man, well, thanks. It was a lot of fun. I couldn't believe the size of the field. 173 massive. Players at a horse event. You know, the day before, you and I were talking with a lot of the staff there and joking around, and we're trying to set the over under, you know, and I started out with 50, and then I said, no, all right, I'm going to go to 75 just because the Palm Beach Kennel Club puts on a fine horse tournament there often, and so I figured they might attract a few more players. Never in my wildest dreams did I imagine 173 runners for a horse event. It was a dream come true, and if they didn't have that many, I wouldn't have cashed probably. So I'm happy they did.
Well, it was an absolutely great run, buddy, and we're going to talk a lot more about the circuit event in our main topic. But I enjoyed railing you from the cash tables, of course, you know, because I'm such a good fan and friend that I can't sit there. I bear to watch you play. I had to go down and try to, you know, win money at the cash table. Yeah. But we were texting back and forth, and it was exciting. You had some other folks that were texting me during the night. Hey, give me an update on Chris. And so so the entire Annie Up Nation, at least the Annie Up Nation that already knew about this and responded, is sending you well-deserved, heartfelt congratulations.
That's cool. I'm starting to blush. I appreciate it. It's really cool. It's real rewarding. And, you know, for those of you who don't know, the cash game tables are on an entirely different floor at the Palm Beach Kennel Club. So Scott had to put in a lot of effort in to rail me, I guess, from a distance.
Yeah, you know, I got winded walking up those stairs a couple times. Finally, I said, forget it, man.
It's not easy, Scott, man, especially when you should have seen how much you ate at that Chinese buffet the night before. I'm sure you know what? At least your legs were dogs those days, you know. You may have been a rat, but your legs were dogs that day.
Well, Chris, you know, it turns out that the names that people call us aren't reserved for just dog and rat. Not only are we dogs and rats, Chris, we are angle shooters.
Yes, we are.
Angle shooters.
Proud to be an angle shooter.
We received an email this week, and who sent it is not important, but sent an email talking about the show a couple weeks ago when we talked about the guy angle shooting because he wanted the guy's hand killed for standing up during the tournament.
Yeah.
And, of course, we said, hey, you know, it's angle shooting. Angle shooting shooters should be waterboarded and have their fingernails pulled out or something. Something like that, apparently.
Yeah, we weren't happy with what the guy was doing, basically.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. So this email writer said, but you guys are the biggest angle shooters out there.
Wow. That's quite an accomplishment.
You know, absolutely. And you know how nice and thin-skinned I am. I was like, what did we do?
Are we going to have our chat banned?
I don't know. But I was worried. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Did we, you know, because we've made some missteps in the past. And I'm like, oh, no. Did we do it again?
Yeah.
Did we step in the doo-doo one more time, and now we have to dig ourselves out of it? So I read the rest of the email, and it turns out that we are angle shooters, Chris, because we use our listeners' information on the show without their permission. You know, when they write in and say, here's a hand of the week, I can't wait to hear it on the show, we have the audacity to put it on the show.
How dare we?
The jail cells are open and we're running wild, Chris.
The prisoners are running the show. It's not good.
And not only that, we are also angle shooters because we do not let our fans gorge at the buffet of swag, Chris. This particular emailer said, oh, it is terrible. You have these sponsors that give the prizes, and when people have already won a prize, you don't give them a second prize.
It's just like those McDonald's commercials where they're like Monopoly game or whatever. You know, it's like one entry per family or, you know, whatever, you know, per household or something. You know, you can't just sit there and just constantly feed us ideas and, you know, otherwise it would breed mediocrity. You know what I mean? You have people sitting there sending us like a million hands of the week. Here's every hand I've had in my entire session for the last 6 months. Keep picking one from there and sending me stuff. I want all the No. That's why, you know, since you got something, you're going to have to give us something. You know, you can't give us something else and try to get, you know, I mean, it makes them want to send in something quality the first time around, too.
Yes, absolutely. Now, obviously, we're having some fun with this. But the reason I put it on the show is I just wanted to clear the air.
You're good at that.
Make sure the air is clear. unlike the car air in the car driving home from Palm Beach Kennel Club.
Yeah, that's because of your Chinese buffet.
Yeah, it was not clear air at all there. I just want to clear the air for folks out there in case they're confused about this stuff. And I'm being serious here. We're not having fun anymore.
Right.
First, let's take the whole submission thing. We have things on the show, right, Chris? Called the hotline, mailbag, hand of the week, which we encourage our listeners to send us stuff to put on the show. So when you send it to us, we're probably going to put it on the show.
Especially when it comes in on the email address podcast@antiupmagazine.com. We're pretty much assuming that you've listened to the show and you got that address, so you're sending it to us that way, right? I mean, that's...
I would think so, but just in case there's some confusion out there, this is the second email we've gotten in recent memory that says, hey, you got to give people's permission to use their stuff. No, we don't.
No.
And I'm not trying to be flipped by that. I'm giving a lesson to folks out there. Anytime you send or call any member of the media, you are tacitly giving them approval to use that however they want.
Unless you specifically say, this is not for use off the record kind of thing. And then, of course, you know.
And even then. Could.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Not that we would, but some people would.
Yeah, so you just got to be careful who you're dealing with. But, you know, this is a fun show. This is not the New York Times, Washington Post, Hard News. You know, this is a fun show. If you're sending us stuff, we're using it. So, you know, don't send us stuff if you don't want us to use it. You know.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I wrote back to the letter writer. I'm like, you know, hey, everybody has a right not to have their stuff used on the show, and that right extends to not sending it to us in the first place.
Right.
And we do our best too. Some people write in like, you know, hey, here's my real name, but please on the show call me Angel Eyes 4792 Justin Bieber Love. I'm happy to do that. I don't need to put your whole name on the show. You tell me what you want to be called, and that's what we're going to put on the show. You tell me what you want to be on the show, and the stuff that you don't want to be on the show, that's fine.
Yep.
But when you send it to us, it's going on the show. We're not going to send you a release form from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe. Getting your express permission.
Oh, man. That's hilarious. But I remember first hearing that phrase when I was in high school. Somebody was like, they're from the firm of Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe. I'm like, really? That's an unfortunate naming of a law practice or whatever.
And then just to clarify on the swag, as my good friend and partner here mentioned, what we don't want is people just sending us stuff expressly to get swag. We'll give you one. We'll give you a freebie one the first time you sit in. If you're just trying to get a deck of those cards or a T-shirt or something like that, that's great. But after that, if you send it in, it's no more swag for you.
No.
And we're not being mean. And I think the problem, this letter I thought, is that we have all the stuff in our house, right?
Yeah.
And if we don't give it out to somebody on the show, that I'm just rolling around in my bed at night in PMS pokerware T-shirts, J-Design playing cards, and... Poker Breakdown Pro downloads.
Oh, yeah. No, check out eBay. We've got like 5 billion things on there to sell. Every week we don't give something away. It's awesome. It's more money for us.
No, that is absolutely not the truth. In fact, actually, our great sponsors actually send the stuff themselves, so we never even see it. So if we use a repeat person on the show and we say, hey, sorry, you've already won swag. We're not giving you swag. We still give the mention to our sponsors, as we should. And our sponsor saves the money because they don't have to send it out and save shipping.
Yeah, and we don't get anything out of it except, you know, the ability to just give our listener something because they're helping us out. So, I mean, you know, it's like win-win. Leave us alone. feedback,
from somebody who's already got swag, Chris. So go ahead and be the Grinch and not send him any.
This is Clint from Taiwan. And he says, in the last PokerCast, you guys talked about the different languages spoken at casinos. I got to tell you guys that I mostly play all around Taiwan, but he likes to get over to Macau every couple of months, and only two languages, easy. Oh, man. He says they normally speak Cantonese, as most of southern China speaks it. They also speak Mandarin, as it's the official language of China, and they, of course, speak English, as all foreigners speak that language. So they also, he said, speak Portuguese.
Wow.
Some of them do, because it used to be part of Portugal, which is really weird. I'd like to look at that afterward. I want to know how that happened. So they also have a lot of Europeans that come in, and They want to sit together. So they try to keep it to two main languages over there, Mandarin and English. He said that most of the people there usually can speak at least those two. But the dealers speak at least three languages, English, Cantonese, and Mandarin, and are always in charge of keeping the chat down to a minimum. I have never heard them talk about not speaking language over there. It is just kind of the Wild West. That's your favorite saying, isn't it? The Wild West.
Yeah, mine's the Wild Wild West.
Oh, okay.
This is just the Wild West. A little more milder.
That's right, because Wild West is live, while Wild West is online. That's right.
Yeah,
it's kind of like brick and mortar. And
excellent, yes, I like that.
But he said there are a lot less rules than normal casinos in the States and in Canada. They kind of just let it go until someone says something. Most people just don't worry about it and hope that they're not colluding. A trusting bunch, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know, hey, sometimes it just is what it is. I know people don't like to hear that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is what it is. You know, if you play there, that's you're just going to have to accept it there. And you can not go play there, just like you could not send any up stuff to use on the show.
Well played. Well, thanks, Clint. That's a great thing. I had no idea. You know, a couple of our friends have gone to Macau and played, and they never responded or said anything like that to us before, so I had no
idea. They did, actually, but I think they did it in Cantonese, and they couldn't understand.
Oh, man.
All right, well, Dave from San Jose has written in. He is our mailbag this week, and again, Chris, this is one of the folks that gave me a last name and said, hey, just call me Dan from San Jose.
Yes.
Look at me. Look at the utter restraint that I'm having right now. Not to out this valued listener's last name.
Man. You're taking the high road, buddy. Take the high road.
I'm a changed man today, Chris.
See what a little email can do for you?
All right. Well, he's emailing about the hand of the week. And this is what he says. He's a LTLFTC. Long-time listener, first-time contactor. This is okay me to the last word, but I like it.
Very good.
He says, I've been listening to your podcast for years, going to and coming from work, and have enjoyed it very much. Aw, thanks.
Don't say you're blushing. I'm tired of you saying that.
But I'm perpetually blushing. But one thing that has bothered me about with almost every PokerCast has finally driven me to write. I'm wondering if I'm on my own little troubled island on this one, but when people are verbalizing or writing about Hold'em and the cards that came up on the flop, or Omaha whole cards even, they do not do it in any ranking order. I know this sounds nitpicky for sure, but when I'm driving, it sure would be easier to remember the flop or Omaha whole cards if the cards were stated in ranking order, preferably descending. For example, if the flop was 7 of diamonds, 3 of hearts, jack of diamonds, I would state the flop as jack of diamonds, 7 of diamonds, 3 of hearts.
Mm.
It does not make sense to me to state the actual physical order of the cards, and it only makes me have to mentally rearrange the cards in order, because, of course, the turn and river cards should remain penultimate. I almost got that right. I've been practicing all night, too. Penultimate and ultimate in order, as that order is helpful when putting the other story to the action. He says, in seven-card games, too, the physical order matters to the story of the action. He says, am I the only one here whose normally well-oiled brain synapses turn to molasses by this? It's crazy, but many times I actually pause the poker cast to do my mental rearrangement and recall the hero's hold cards before I continue listening. You must note that if it took me this long to finally write, and it's about this very nitpicky thing, then it must be a fabulous poker cast. The best on the planet, Chris.
The best on the planet by angle shooters.
Yes. Thanks for the great weekly poker cast and humorous banter. Dave, we appreciate you writing in, and this is exactly what I love about the nation, is they're not afraid to tell us when they're wrong. Sometimes they take the long way around of a lot of praise so we don't get upset.
Well, first, Dave,
I have thick skin.
First, Dave, put down the PlayStation 3 remote control and stop putting the the NutraSweet on your cereal, because your short-term memory is really really bad. But I think the reason
what does that mean? Oh, because you can't remember the cards.
You can't remember the order of the cards. But
I don't know. He's driving. I get it. That's a good point.
No, absolutely. But here's the thing.
We're not doing the hand of the week. You're there scribbling it down. And
yeah.
we don't want Dave to get in a wreck in San Jose there because he's scribbling down the cards. So.
A lot of the hands of the week, though, if not almost, I would say 90% of them are directly pulled from their hand histories, and that's the way they're typed up from the hand histories. The actual cards the way they came, and the actual cards the way they were dealt, and actual cards the way you have them. So for the person sending it to us to have to go through and to reorder the cards in the right way to send them to you, or for us to have to read the entire hand and copy and paste and cut, and you know, we just read it the way it comes in. You know what I mean? So I understand what he's saying, but the time that it would take to have to redo all that just to make three cards in the right order is just kind of time-consuming, I would think, too, though.
Well, I might disagree that it's time-consuming. What I would say is long-time listeners or LTL FTCs, like Dave, probably know that I am not capable of getting through a hand of the week without screwing it up anyhow.
I know. That's what I mean. The less hands in a pot, the better. So I don't want you to go in there and make even more, you know, mistakes in these hands. Just read them verbatim.
You know, I was a hurdler in high school, and I tripped over every single hurdle. So then you're like adding one more hurdle at the final, at the finish line, for me to fall flat on my face over by doing this. It takes a little bit of effort to put that hurdle there, but I guarantee you I'm face planning.
Absolutely. You know, and that's the last thing we need, because we get made fun of enough on this show. I'm really getting tired of being made fun of, you know.
Yeah,
I'm getting tired of it. That's it. I'm going to stop playing. I have my...
All right, well, Dave, you know, I will give you this, Dave. I will try. I will do my best to remember to do this and not do it without screwing it up. But as Chris says, you know, we get the hands of the week in a lot of different formats. I mean, obviously, the hand history is great because all the information is there. So that's the best. But obviously, in a live game, there's no hand history. So, you know, we take the stuff as we get it. And sometimes the information's incomplete, but still makes for a good hand of the week. So, but I will do my best. This will be my almost March 2011 resolution to try to reorder the hand of the week cards. And, of course, it's great because this week you're going to be leading the hand of the week. So I'm off the hook this week.
Yeah.
All pressure's on you, buddy.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that the cards will be in the right order. So,
all right, Dave, you are a first-time contactor, which means we are happy. In fact, thrilled, I would say, Chris.
Yes.
To extend to you a quality piece of swag, a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro Hand History Analysis Program for single or mixed games from element26.net. My wife's going to be upset because she was hoping that would make her 10 downloads of this that she got from previous swag winners. I didn't give it to, but that's fine. That's fine. I'll deal with that later. I don't like to bring my personal stuff onto the show. But Dave will be happy to send that to you. And, of course, we encourage everyone to send their stuff to podcast at AnnieUpMagazine.com.
Well, what bothers me is that this was the keystone of the hand, you know, breakdowns that was going to be on the bed with you, rolling around, covering up the strategic area. Now that it's not there, people are going to see certain things on your body that they shouldn't see. So it's a shame that we're giving another one away here. But you know, poor Mrs. Long, she's going to have to deal with it at home. Hey, you know, we don't have a hotline this week. Maybe it's because we were on the road and people knew we were on the road. They didn't have to call us. But no hotline to use this week. Got a few calls, but nothing really usable. Don't forget, the phone number is 813-448-1120. You call us, we use it, we'll give you something if you've never called before.
We're so mean like that.
Oh, man. But
like
we would have...
Con Air.
But we would have given you something, right? If you had called, we would have given you a nice t-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the AnnieUp store at www.AnnieUpStore.com. How'd I do, Scott? I don't usually get to read
first
the swag
time
line.
Out. First time
good.
Cosenza.
Pretty good, huh?
Yeah, it's not bad.
Not too bad.
I might just have to take over the show. I might just
I don't think so.
Call in myself and get some swag from now on, let you do the whole show.
No, I've learned a long time ago this is your show and I'm merely just along for the ride.
All right, we got some housekeeping here, Chris. Lots of it, actually.
Yes.
And I've got a lot of housekeeping here to do at the house, too, because I've got a home game on Saturday. So if anybody's free, let's come over, vacuum, clean the toilet, buy some snacks for me. You're more than welcome.
Absolutely.
That would be great.
Because I'm one of the few AnnieUp home gamers who gets to see your house when it's not just a home game. And believe me, we need Florence from the Jeffersons to come on over and tidy
up. Or Hazel.
Or Alice, you know, one of those three.
All right, but housekeeping for the show this week. PokerStars has this great home games feature, right?
Yes.
and Vanessa talking about it. And you and I talked about a lot, trying to integrate this into the Antiup Nation in a good way. Unfortunately, it's got a 50-player max, Chris.
Yeah.
And we have 51 listeners, so I don't want to make somebody mad. So ultimately, we decided that right now we're gonna pause on an official Antiup home game product. But we did ask some of our fans to go ahead and create some on their own, and who jumped right into it but Gambit727, Chris?
Actually, I think it was his robot assistant who set it up for him. But yeah, he's the one who got
that
on
goes
the board.
Without saying. Of course.
That goes without saying.
He was chomping at the bit to create a fan one. So he has created the Antiup Nation home game on PokerStars. And go ahead and go to the Antiup Magazine forum at antiupmagazine.com/forum, and he'll be happy to extend to you an invitation. And they've been playing a lot of cash games and tournaments. In fact, I actually played a tournament last night as part of it, Chris.
Cool.
12 runners. I finished 12th.
Really? Did you really finish 12th, or are you just being funny?
No, I finished 12th, and it is great because you finished 13th on the horse. So,
right, so
I had a higher finish this week.
Yes. Than you did. Oh, man. You know what? It reminds me of your Stud 8 encounter online, too, the same night when you went out last.
Oh, man. But nice yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a good way to play with the home games. And Gambit's been all over getting the cash game tables and tournaments going. So if you want to be part of that that particular group, go ahead and do it. And if other folks want to create their own little side Antiup Nation home games, by all means. It's a free country.
That's right.
We also have added Zips to the Antiup Forum. You know, that was part of the old beef, beer, and poker.
Yeah.
Forum. It's folded, but now we've integrated it into ours because a lot of those people were our players anyhow.
Right.
And they've got their own home game, too. So lots of places to play on PokerStars in the home game for our listeners.
Very cool. Hey, you know, I can't believe our cruise is like a week and a half away or something.
Yeah, yeah. Trust me. I've got a lot to do here, so.
Just flies. And this is like our last call. Absolutely last call. Price is $4.99, and we can only take bookings till Monday. Right? That's it. Monday's the last, absolute last day.
Hopefully you're listening to this over the weekend.
Yes, and hopefully you're listening to it like right now. right now.
If you call now, we'll throw in a free copy of Time Life Magazine.
And we only have a handful of rooms left, too, so you need to go to antiupmagazine.com/cruise or give Scott a call, 727-331-4335. Right now.
And remember, our Antiup store is up and going at antiupstore.com, and we made a couple sales already, so people are liking what's there. But remember, there are some great Antiup logo items and also dozens of other tremendous poker products to choose from there.
Yep, and of course, we talk about this every week, too, the Ambassadors. We're having some nice turnout for that stuff, but if you want to be a part of the Antiup Nation, antiupmagazine.com/ambassadors. We're pretty much anywhere in the country now. We're looking for people to talk to us about whether or not they'd like to, you know, to be a part of the nation and to be our eyes and ears in their own local poker room. So give us a shout-out. All right, so, you know, other than me making some news myself this week, there has to be stuff that happened around the country. So why don't you catch us up on the Antiup News Desk?
All right. Two Florida poker players who stole chips from one tournament and used them in a later tournament that both cashed in were sentenced this week, one receiving 142 days in jail and the other 2 years probation.
That's huge. That's huge. That's huge, don't you think?
Yeah, there's a lot of things I like about this. I mean, one, it's not just kicking these people out of the casino saying, hey, you're not welcome here. They actually got, they called a 5-0 on them.
Yes, yes. It's like the all violators will be prosecuted when you go into a casino. You know, you see that. They mean it, man. They mean business and good.
And the other thing, too, is, you know, this is going to be one of those upcoming World's Dumbest Criminals show on the True Channel or whatever channel it's on. Folks, if you're going to take chips from one tournament and use them in another, let me kind of walk you through what happens here. At the end of every tournament, almost every casino that I've been in counts down the chips.
Yep.
They put them in racks, and they're going to notice if a couple of donuts have gone missing. So they're going to be looking for them. And when they count down the chips in a future tournament and they've got a couple extra donuts, they are going to put two and two together, easily come to four, And guess what, Chris?
They're going to buy some coffee?
Well, of course, that goes without saying.
Other donuts?
relatively new development in casinos, they have cameras at the casino, Chris.
Really?
And a lot of them, actually.
Wow. Man, it's good to know. How else could I have finished 13th this week without the cameras knowing I was there and doing that? So that's great.
You know, it's almost harder to get pinched by robbing a bank and hanging out in the lobby buying people lunch. it's amazing to me that somebody would go, hey, you know what we can do? Hey, take us with the chips and then we'll use them later. Oh, my gosh. You know, I didn't read the names of these folks, but I'm guessing their middle names are Beavis and Butthead.
Man, it's remarkable that you would, you know, and I remember, like, someone had said that some cruise ship, when they had done a poker cruise or something, you know, they didn't use quality chips like we do.
Right,
they used,
right.
like, generic Walmart chips, and people, when they got into the port, went to the store and bought chips, and then got back on the ship, and, I mean, really? Really? You're that desperate to win a couple of bucks that you get? Oh, man, I tell you, unbelievable. All right. The annual NBC Heads Up, or National Heads Up Poker Championship, that's almost as wordy as the Chad Brown No Limit Texas Hold'em, whatever.
You almost nailed it.
I almost did. The annual NBC National Heads Up Poker Championship kicks off March 4th at Caesars Palace in Las Vegas with 64 of the best poker players in the world in the field. Although, when you say that Emmett Smith is included in there, I'm not exactly sure if it's 64 of the best.
Are but you Emmett Smith's kidding players. Me? Emmett Smith has game. You know how many World Series poker bracelets he has, Chris?
Not as many as Super Bowl rings he has.
He has exactly the same number of bracelets as you and I do.
That's true, but I guarantee I have more World Series caches than he does.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Later.
That's true.
Yeah. Jury's still out on that one.
But really, Emmett Smith, really? What, were you thinking that, you know, the Dancing with the Stars, you know, kind of mentality? Hey, we had Emmett Smith on Dance with the Stars and our ratings went up. Maybe the NBC ratings will go up for poker if we put a football player in the field. I mean, what are they thinking?
Well, here's what I think happened, Chris. You know, this particular event spawns a lot of fantasy brackets and stuff out there, right?
Right.
I'm guessing someone out there said, we had Emmett Smith to his. Those fantasy people are going to draft him in the first round. And then I'll win all the chips.
Well, that's a good theory, although I'm going to pay particular attention to the commercials that run during the actual airing of it a few months from now and see if there's, like, Just for Men commercials. If Just for Men's a sponsor and they push to get Emmett into the field, I'm going to, like, probably vomit all over the floor. But I think that's probably what happened. Look for the Just for Men beard, gray beard on Emmett Smith and then see if they try to comb it out with some, you know, dark-colored die, whatever the hell they call it.
That's right. I wonder if we'll have his rocking chair during his heads up match there at the featured table.
Yeah. You got Walt Frazier and Keith Hernandez standing behind him doing the play by play.
All right. Well, finally, about 30 NFL players scheduled to play in a Phil Helmuth celebrity charity poker tournament to help provide hearing aids to people in impoverished countries. We're told by the NFL, Chris, that they couldn't play because of the league's zero tolerance policy on gambling.
What'd you say? I couldn't hear you. That's terrible, though, don't you think? I mean, they're trying to help out charity. So let them donate all their winnings then. You know, let them play.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a slippery slope here. Pete Rose ruined this for all of us, right?
Yeah.
And that basketball ref, you know, and now they're all over the crazy on this stuff. And you don't want to let somebody open the door, barn door, and the wolf runs in. But come on, charity, really? A charity poker tournament? And it turns out I think most of the players actually donated the $2,000 buy-in, even though they didn't play, which was very nice of them. Maybe they should have invited Emmett Smith, because apparently once you're retired, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah, we don't care about you tainting yourself after your career, but while you're in the NFL, damn it, you're not going to play poker. Poker's not gambling anyway.
You know, I want Roger Goodell. I mean, obviously, he's got a lot going on right now, right?
Yeah.
But I want to put him on a plane to, like, Kenya, right? and go to the little kid who needs a hearing aid and go, sorry, we really would have gotten you that hearing aid, but we can't let Tony Gonzalez play in a charity event. I'm sure you understand if you could hear me.
Yes. You feel good, good all?
It's just galling. Ugh, come on, folks. The common sense. I mean, I'm all for rules and not bending the rules too often, but sometimes common sense has to step in at some point, doesn't it?
Yes, and this is similar to like when the NHL got involved before when they wanted that guy to play in the Poker Stars event.
Right.
It's all the same. I think, was Goodall even the commissioner for them, too, back then? I don't know. I mean,
He
probably was. But it's ridiculous.
Probably to blame for the World Series being canceled in 94, too.
Yes, I know you want your professional athletes to be above contempt or whatever, but come on. We're talking about a fun event that's giving something to the needy. I mean, give me a break.
Crazy. Crazy, I tell you.
Remember Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Well, we as we mentioned at the top of the show, we traveled to the circuit event this week, and it was a very good trip for you, Chris.
Yeah, it was. It was. It was a lot of fun, too.
And yeah, we did have a lot of fun, even though my total winnings for the week were $45.
Hey, winnings, that's the key.
That is key. And I'm not even fudging on that either.
I know, you won it.
It's not even, hey, yeah, I got home to the wife, how'd you do? Oh, broke even. It's not even that. I actually won the $45. I have it right here in my wallet. I can show anybody when they come over to help me clean the toilet for the home game. But Chris, you got the Hendon Mob monkey off your back.
Yes.
Cashing in the horse event. Meaning now that you and Faso will be listed on Hendon Mob. I, of course, at least will have a season pass for the TV show Mobsters. Darn proud of that, too, by the way. Very hard to get.
You know, though, I think that if we searched your career long enough, you could probably find an event that's deserving of being on Hendon Mob, but just they didn't send the results to him.
Certainly not apes.
No, not apes.
I think you technically have to cash in an event to be listed on Hendon Mob.
I mean, I've cashed in a few multi-table events that, you know, when I look at some other people, because sometimes I'll do research on a pro for the show or for the magazine, and I look and it'll say $125 qualifier at the Bellagio, and they'll make like $150, and that's on their Hendon Mob page. And I'm like, oh my God, I've won way more than that, and fields way bigger than that, and buy-ins larger than that. Why isn't that on Hendon Mob? You know? But it's good to know that I'll finally be on there for what they consider legitimate.
All right, well, we're going to break down this trip because we had a lot of fun and we had a lot of good poker stuff to talk about as part of it as well, too. But start off just in general. I don't know what you thought, Chris, but I thought the staff did a great job down there. They had a lot of challenges inherent with running an event like this in Florida. By the way, in case folks have not heard our show, this was the first World Series Poker Circuit event ever held in Florida. And the first one ever held at a non-casino. It's a pari-mutuel poker room and Greyhound track down there.
Right, exactly.
So a lot of challenges. One of the big ones that I'm going to continue harping about, and to the folks here in Tallahassee, listen to me, is that it's almost impossible to add temporary tables for tournaments here in Florida.
Yes. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So while this was the biggest poker room in the state with 60 tables, they added 4, so 64 tables now. The circuit just came from Harris Tunica, where they set up, the manship there told me they set up 128 tables for that.
Yeah.
So, it's a little challenging to kind of get the fields in and do the cash games and stuff like that. And of course, it's the first time doing it, and they just found out they're doing it, got it in November or even December, I think.
Yeah, it was a very quick turnaround, very impressive. And, we talked to Noah Carbone, the manager there, and he talked about knocking down walls again for next year. So he's going to do his best probably to add even more tables for it, or at least have room to add the tables. But I totally agree with you. I think that the state of Florida needs to, or the pari-mutuels need to understand that, a lot more stuff could be happening there if they had more room.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know? Yeah, it was great though, and you know, I like the what they did with it though. I like the redesign in such a short period of time. Like you said, they had the welcome to the finish line area for the final table and the final two table area, and all brand new felts, nice looking felts with the logo, the circuit event logo on it, and their logo, and it was nice to play on those tables. You know, it was nice to have new chips, new logos, new everything. It just felt like a great environment. It felt very professional, and they brought in a lot of the circuit staff too for the dealers. So you had the circuit dealers, and you had a nice mix of the best dealers they had at Palm Beach too. It was really a great experience.
Now, one of the things that I thought was interesting too was the cash games were strong. The room was buzzing.
Yeah.
Time there with a lot of cash games, but I don't think folks that typically go to these, now this is our very first circuit event that we've ever gone to, so it's hard to compare that to.
Yeah.
But you and I have both been to World Poker Tour events, and there was a gajillion more cash game variety at those events that I've been to. Mm. You know, some of the big nosebleed games and some of the smaller ones, and they just weren't able to get that going at this particular event. Again, probably no fault of their own. I mean, they only have so many tables they can run. But I wondered if that was the reason that they didn't get more variety, even though they had a lot of games going.
Yeah, I don't know. And I feel like the area will always reflect what's up on the board. And you know as well as I do that Florida is really a no-limit state because we came to the game late. Whereas when I was at my WPT events up in Northeast, you know, there's already stud in the air there as it goes. So when you get the big time guys showing up where there's already good stud games going, you know, it's a lot easier to get a bigger one to go and spread or a hose or whatever. So that could have contributed to it as well. I think everyone down here prefers to play no limit as a whole. So I would think that could be the other reason why the variety just kind of struggled. I know you were dying for a 4-8 Omaha game to get going, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah, I couldn't get it going. Even on the night of the horse, I thought they'd get something like that going. But I'm not complaining because I got in that no limit game and took my licks. But I recovered and won money. So, you know, you're not going to hear me complain when I win money.
Yeah, it was pretty funny because while I was playing, you're like, I'm down money. And I kept lasting longer. So you forced you to stay at the table and try to win your money back. And I was feeling terrible. I'm like, oh, my God, if he loses a ton of money because I'm up here, I'm just going to feel like hell. But I lasted long enough so that you could last long enough to win all your money back and then the profits. That was great. I was glad that happened because I didn't want it to be a terrible drive home, you know, because you love to whine, you know. I'll still never forget that first night at the Orleans when we were in Vegas, and I'm sleeping till like 10, and the door slams in the hotel room, and I'm like, oh, well, let's get up. I'm like, why? Because you sleeping in late cost me to lose 2 racks. I'm like, what? I didn't tell you to go down and play. And you lost 2 racks at the Orleans. And you start yelling at me. I was fearful that was going to be a long 4-hour drive home from Palm Beach if you lost at the cash game. So
in my defense, I yell at you all the time anyhow. So
that's true.
It just, you know, it's like being married, you know. You're going to get yelled at anyhow. Just choose your poison, what you're going to yell at.
Yeah, you know, and I think I have to say this now for the first time. I think that you and I make way too many marriage references when we're in public. I think we need to stop doing that. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I always am very cognizant of saying my business partner, Scott Long.
Yeah. I like to drop in the business when I can. Sometimes, though. Depends. If I'm playing to a right crowd, though. Just want to say my partner.
All right, well, I have a question for you, and it's for the Anti-Up Nation as well. Okay,
is this the same question you asked me as soon as you got paid your money?
Yeah, pretty much. All right, you know, okay, I did cash in this event, and I have a cash now. But is it a World Series cash, Scott? Do you consider it a World Series cash, or do you have to actually be in Vegas playing in the actual full-fledged World Series for it to be considered a World Series cash? Now, I haven't looked at Hendon Mob to see how they categorize these types of caches or whatever, or figure it out, but what do you think?
Really, you haven't been to Hen and Mom, like,
no,
constantly refreshing?
No, I haven't.
Really? Are you sure?
Yes, no. But even that, even, like, aside from me, I've never actually looked at the stats carefully enough of other players to know if that counts as a World Series cash in their, like, statistics or whatever. Do you consider it a cash?
You know, this is one of those weird things. I would feel comfortable calling my business partner, a World Series of Poker casher.
All right.
It sounds weird, actually, casher. It'd be nicer to say ring winner or bracelet winner.
Yeah, I tried, dude. I tried.
you biffed at the end there, so, you know.
I did my best.
Now I got to carry the shame with me until the next tournament. But yeah, it was a World Series event sanctioned by the World Series. It just happened to be a circuit, not actually at the World Series. Now, of course, when you say that, people were probably going to immediately think that it was at the actual World Series. But you know what? I'm going to say that that doesn't make a big difference to me. Because here's the thing, and we'll talk about the structure later on, but I think this particular tournament was more skill-based than the ones that you would play in June and July.
Yeah.
Going out. So therefore, it should count. And beyond that, too, I think some of the circuit events actually count towards the Player of the Year points. Now, probably not this one. But yeah, but some of the main events do.
Yeah, so I can't remember. I think it is the main events, right? The main events count. Yeah.
So if Caesars is going to count those, then yeah. It's one big year-long series of tournaments in my mind.
Yeah, and this is the other thing, too. They brought up when they moved it to Europe and they win bracelets there, they're putting those in their bracelet totals. You know, like John Jawanda won the main event over there. That's a bracelet. They're not going to say he has four bracelets. They're going to say he has five because of that one or whatever. Then the total is in that. But so I guess so. I often wonder because, you know, I've played at the Palm Beach Kennel Club and I've played in tournaments there and I've cashed there and stuff. And I don't think of it as, you know, the World Series when I'm playing there because I'm just so familiar with it. You know what I mean? But it is. The World Series brought their brand there, and they made an official event, so I guess it is an official cash. I just was very curious to see what you thought. Because, you know, we talked about, you know, when we played in Apes and you played in the free roll and you get your seat, was that a cash or not? And a lot of people said it wasn't a cash. So then I thought, huh, is this a cash for the World Series? Or is it just, hey, you made some money and you're going to be on Hindenbaum now? I have no idea, but I'm glad you feel that way.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see what the Hindenbaum, see if you have an asterisk there.
Yeah, it's true.
And that'll be a deciding factor. We'll call you Chris Maris Cosenza.
61. You were talking about it being skill, you know, and the horse event really does bring out a lot of the pros who, especially the ones who like the mixed games. And we got to talk to Tom Schneider because he was on the Poker Wars Live the same night we were. He came in, we chatted with him a little bit, but he was in town. I think it was 2006 Player of the Year for the World Series, so he's a great mixed games player, and he was there. That was really cool. And of course, the eventual champion, Brent Carter, he was at my table at the end when I finally got knocked out. He was at my table, and I gotta tell you, I never one of the things about Brent Carter was I was always told that he lived at least some of his time on Treasure Island here in Florida, which is right near us. And it turns out that that's a different Brent Carter, and I asked him about that. I was like, hey, you still have a place on Treasure Island? And he's like, no, that's another Brent Carter. And then we went through this whole conversation about it, and I couldn't believe it. All this time, even like within the magazine, I feel bad because we've written like, you know, Brent Carter, who had a Treasure Island home, and he's never even had a Treasure Island. This is probably his first trip to Florida for all I know, you know. Feel bad. But you know what, though? He's been playing for so long that he knows pretty much everything, and he had a lot to say. I have never seen a poker player have that many comments about the way a tournament was run or a way tables were being broken down or the way, I mean, he had something to say about everything. I couldn't believe it. And I wasn't going to be the one to say anything, you know, because, you know, we're Antiup Magazine. We got to keep a neutral kind of thing, but all the players are like, oh my God, does he ever stop? And apparently no, because he wins the event. He doesn't stop until he wins.
I thought that was funny, too, because you came down and after cash, you were driving home, and you're like, man, you know, I met this guy, and I was a little surprised at how he acted. And, of course, the next day we get home after the final table, and I'm like, hey, guess what? He won.
He won. I couldn't believe it.
And beat a real good guy that we know from the local area here. Heads up.
Yeah, Tuan Lu, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but he's from Orlando. And he used to be down here in the St. Pete area, and yeah, I was really pulling for him to take it down too, because he's a good guy, and I played with him a little bit, and I was surprised too, because there were, at one point when we were at that table, I had about the same amount of chips as Brent Carter, and I thought, well, maybe I can still win this thing, you know, and then of course I got involved in a Raz hand that didn't go my way, but he ended up winning, so it just goes to show you that really anything can happen too at that with the blinds and stuff. So I was shocked. Oh, you know who else was there? Captain Tom Franklin.
Yeah,
he was in the field. He got knocked out pretty quick. I think you outlasted him, right?
I outlasted him. So I'm going to hang my hat on that.
Hang your hat on that and the $45 you won, so that's pretty good.
All right, well, let's talk about the structure. And the structure, I don't mean just the blind levels, but we'll talk about that. But the overall, how the tournament was managed. First of all, I was pleasantly surprised when I got down there, and we started with 10,000 in chips.
Yes.
After you did the $10 add-on. You know, you go out the actual World Series, non-Asterix World Series events, and you get triple the buy-in. So if it's a $1,500 event, you're going to get $4,500 in chips. This was a $345 buy-in. We'll talk more about that next. But
yeah.
And we got 10,000 in units, which is great for a limit tournament. We had a lot of room to play, and even somebody that went out as early as I did, I lasted almost 5 hours.
Yes. It was pretty remarkable when you look at the players' remaining list, and like 2 hours in, it still says 171 or 72. You lost like one player in 2 or 3 hours. It was pretty incredible. You know, they started to really drop off after dinner, but until then, it was, people were there. The seats were filled, and there was a lot of play. Which is really plays well into our games because we're patient when it comes to limit and horse and things like that, and it makes you be able to play quality holdings and stuff. I really appreciate the 10,000 chips.
Yeah, that was just a pleasant surprise. I mean, if you would have asked me before I got down there, or before I looked at the structure sheet, which of course was posted online, but I would have guessed if I got 5,000 chips, I would have been ecstatic.
Yeah, I would have guessed 5,000 too. Absolutely.
And the 10,000 was just I really went into the tournament really. Patient.
Yep.
So
yep.
Because of that, it was great.
There were a lot of fees, though. Did you notice all the fees that were associated with the buy-in and stuff?
I'm interested to get some feedback from our listeners on this because you were talking to the director of poker down there, and he talked about how they did a good job pricing the tournament for the market. So obviously they've got some leeway in what they charge for events at different circuit events. So I'm curious whether this is similar to other ones, but I was talking to Walt Strakowski, our player of the year last year, live player of the year last year.
Right.
And he was mentioning how the fees and stuff were working out on the night tournaments. And then I was like, I noticed that on the main events. I mean, the event that you and I played in, Chris, $300 buy-in, $45 entry fee. So we actually put out $345. When we got to the table to get an extra 3,000 chips, we started with 7,000 actually. To get an extra 3,000 chips, we had to give a $10 dealer add-on.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also take 3% of the prize pool, which works out to be 10 bucks a player in a $300 event,
right,
for the staff.
Right.
So effectively, it becomes a 290 plus 55 event.
That's true. And and normally I don't have to think about how much to tip because I don't cash.
Right.
But when it happens, I'm like, okay. Well, I already paid 10 earlier and then 10 again, so I've already tipped 20. I cashed for 800. My profit is 500. I've already tipped 20. 10% tip is pretty big. So do I just give them 10 more? I mean, I'm trying to figure out how much, but then again, too, we're guests there, and it's one of our friends that runs the room, and so I wanted to make sure I did. So I tipped well, but as a regular player just going in and saying, hey, I'm trying to make a living, you take that into consideration. I wonder if that actually hurts the dealers. I realize that they've made a ton of money with these things, but I wonder if it hurts the dealers or not, too, knowing that there's that 3% and then the add-on on top of it. It was kind of weird to see an add-on when you already know that money's coming out of your prize or your entry fee.
Yeah, that might have been the first tournament that I was completely aware that they were taking money both ways.
Yeah.
Or actually three ways, actually.
Yeah.
And it's a business. I mean, whatever they can get. Obviously, they got plenty of big fields, so people were not upset about it to the point that they didn't play. So, who are we to complain? I just it just seemed like a lot of money for that particular event.
No, and I just like to see the dealers get as much as they can because it's a grueling, especially a horse tournament.
On horse. Oh,
when you're dealing
gosh.
A horse tournament, you're putting up with a lot of crap as a dealer. And you have to remember a lot of different games. So there's a huge, skill in dealing this stuff and keeping track of it. And especially when it gets toward the end, you have to split pots like five times because of all-ins and everything. I mean, it's crazy. So they deserve to get what they get. They deserve a lot of tips and a lot of appreciation. So I just wonder if that hurts them or not, the way they did this. So I'm not complaining about it because I would gladly tip somebody 20 bucks and then, initially or whatever. But on top of it, I wonder if when the guy's cash, the guy makes 13 grand. I wonder how much he tipped. you know, the guy who won. Did he you know, say, oh, I already gave him a bunch of money? You know, I just think it hurts him, and it's a very weird way to do it. I would have just given him 10,000 chips and, you know, taken 4%. Or, not 4%, but you know what I mean? I think I had 3% and then allow it to the leave the cashers to pay the rest. I don't know, but...
Right.
But I don't know. It's I don't know if there's a way to figure it out, but it just seemed weird that really they're putting their hand in the pot three times.
Yeah.
And that's not cool.
Well, you know, the 10,000 starting chips were great. And we started with 40-minute levels, which I thought was adequate. Obviously, I would have liked an hour, but, you know, I also don't want this to become a four-day event.
No, right.
So 40 minutes seemed fine. But yeah, but I wasn't around towards the end like you were. But the blind structure got a little tougher at the end, sounds
oh,
like.
Oh, man, it was. It was. And here's the funny thing is one of the actual one of the actual four people from Harrah's who was running the tournament actually says to someone, yeah, those last two blind jumps were brutal. I turned to a player at my table and I said, wow, somebody from Harrah's actually admitting that something they did is actually not very good or not the right thing to do? And they all laughed. And then the floor person comes over and is like, what'd you say? I said, oh, no, nothing. I don't want a penalty. You know, nothing, whatever. Harrah's is all good, you know. But really, there were some jumps at the end. It seemed like they were just doubling at the end. And it was very difficult. Everybody, take the final table, for example. There were, like you and I discussed, I think there were like 1.8 million chips in play or something. And there are eight guys left. So they all had about 200,000 chips, roughly, each. Yeah. Okay. The blinds at that point, I think, because when I quit, it were 15,000, 30,000. Okay. So when they quit, it was probably like, I would probably say it was 20-40 or like 25-50. I mean, you have like four big bets, or you know what I mean? Yeah. It's ridiculous. And what I was wondering is why couldn't they have done a little shorter levels earlier on to get out those who really don't know what they're doing or whatever, to thin the field, and then make them longer. You're still playing for 13 hours that day or whatever it is, but divide up the hours differently so that when it matters at the end, you might have a little more time to play with the 10,000, 20,000 limit. And not have to, after 40 minutes, go right to 15:30. And it just seemed to me like that structure was tough on us on the end. I think that if I had a little more time, I might have done
Yeah, obviously a longer level at the end would help a little bit. But ultimately, it's the amount of chips you had. I mean, even if you're short stacked, it doesn't matter whether you have an hour. You're still going to have to go all in a bunch of different times. So, you know, maybe it's... you know, doing something else with the structure, you know, maybe not skipping some levels or spreading out the levels a little bit more so you get more play as you go along. You know, that might be a better way to go. But, you know, like I said, it's a horse event. You know, everything's a two-day event. As it turned out, they were able to get down to a final table, around 12:30 or 1 o'clock
around
11 a.m. start. So it went pretty long as it was. And, you know, add anything else to it, then, I mean, it could have turned into a true two-day event where the second day wasn't just the final table. So, but my question I was talking to you about, and I don't know the answer, is I don't know how much they go back and look at these structures after each event. And, you know, Jimmy Summerfield, who ran this one, and go back and, you know, make notes and try to prove on it in the future. And even if they could... I mean, does it matter if you don't know how many players you're going to get? I mean, are you making your best guess on what the best structure is?
I got to tell you, first of all, I'm finding it very hard to complain about anything, to be honest with you. I mean, we're just talking out loud here and just wondering about how to make things better. So that being said, I also, when I'm sitting there, I totally appreciate four people and poker room managers because I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they balance.
Particularly in a horse.
Yeah, especially in horse. I mean, just to know how to gauge how many cash games to open or how many people are going to show up for a horse event. Because like I said, you and I were sitting the over-under at – you were more generous and you were correct. You said like 100 or even 150. I'm not sure. But I said 50 to 75.
Still wrong. Yeah.
And to know all of a sudden, oh, my God, we got 175, 173 horse players showing up today and we thought we might get – you know, to even do all that, to figure it all out, to be able to – it's just incredible that they have that knowledge. And I'm always appreciative of it. So I'm not really complaining. I just don't know how you fix – certain things when you do have those you know, those intangibles in play and you don't know what's going to happen that day. You don't know if they're going to they had no idea how many were going to show up for that horse event, you know.
Yeah.
So I mean, how can you put a structure up that's going to make it end at one day or 2 days when you don't even know how many are going to show up. So, you know, kudos really to get it to the final table. I just thought they could have still gotten to the final table or at least the final two tables with a little more generous time on the end there. Or like you said, an extra level in between or something. But like I said, I can't complain. I cash. So, but one of the things that was really weird, and this was a topic of conversation a lot, no matter what table you went to,
right,
was the eight hands. They dealt eight hands of each discipline. So, you know, if you're playing online, you know, that makes a lot of sense because it's a computer-generated program. No matter what, you're going to get your eight hands in of that thing, and it's going to happen. But when you – a lot of times they play with time because, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to be in the same game no matter what with the time. This one, when you play eight hands, if you have a slow dealer or you have a floor ruling or a penalty or something takes a long time – I literally at one time, because I played at the same table for like 7 or 8 hours. I didn't get moved for all. But when I finally did get moved, I was at the tail end of stud eight at my table. They said, all right, who's the big blind in the next rotation of limit? And it was me. They said, okay, I need you. Come over to table 51. So I get up. I go to 51, and they're playing Raz. And they just started playing Raz.
Yeah.
So I had played Raz, stud, stud eight, and then had to go play Raz, stud, stud eight again. Now, to me, that doesn't seem fair because I could have needed to hit no limit or limit hold'em at that point to try to get big pots, or I could be a fantastic stud player, and now I've benefited by playing stud for six rotations or six games or whatever, rather than, you know. So to me, that eight hands thing is a conundrum. I don't think that it. I don't know. I mean, I guess there's ups and downs to both ways. I think I would have just preferred each, you know, blind, not blind level, because that would have been too much. But
yeah, see, that's the problem, is if you do each blind level, then you're talking 40 minutes to each game. And some games, like Hold'em, are faster than Omaha or Stud 8. So then you're weighting it more towards the stud skill players rather than the Hold'em skill players.
But couldn't they have just had a second alarm that went off at 20 minutes in between and said, okay.
Yeah, but it's the same problem. You're still compressing it. You're compressing it, but it's the same problem that some of the games take longer to deal than the others. So with this, as you mentioned, this was going on at every table. People talk about it. At my table, I was telling people, you know, this is the most fair way to do it that way. You know, the games are balanced out. Obviously, I mean, there are kinks in the system like you found. You know, every table in the tournament is on a different game.
Yeah.
So if you get moved to it, you're going to get potentially a bad situation or potentially a good situation. But ultimately, I think it's the most fair way to do it. My problem, at least at our table, was there was a lot of hullabaloo over when the games switch.
Yeah,
because they set it up where you use chips in the well, and every time you finish shuffle, you move a chip over so you know where you are. Well, at the beginning of the tournament, there's eight people at the table.
Right.
So eventually, we had to tell the dealer because dealers are human and they make errors, and sometimes you might forget to move the chip over, or maybe you move two chips over by accident. And we had to tell we had to stop for a while and get a floor ruling because. There's no reason that the game shouldn't have changed when the button got to the eighth seat.
Right, exactly.
We had that.
We had that too.
People,
we had
right?
this, yeah, the same thing.
No, eventually, when somebody gets knocked out and you have seven players, then it gets all haywire. Then you got to go back to the count and the chips. But
but
that was the bigger problem, was that there was people. We had nine dealers at the table trying to keep track of the games.
Yeah.
And it makes it a little more difficult. But no, I'm a big fan of doing it by number of hands, despite the shortcomings, because I think there are fewer shortcomings with that.
Yeah, and again, it does balance out, because every time you say, it makes you have to play six stud hands in a row, and that could benefit you, it also doesn't benefit the other guy who would rather play hold'em and now has gotten, you know what I mean? So for every person it benefits, it probably doesn't benefit someone else, and that balances it out. So that I agree. I like the eight hands. I mean, I like knowing that I'm going to play the same amount of each one. And if I suck at one game, I could be really, really tight in it and know that it's only eight hands of me being tight where I can get back into my normal game for the other ones or whatever. Whereas if I got to sit there for 40 minutes and play Raz, you know, and I'm going to put a bullet in my head. So, Yeah, I like the eight hands thing. And you're right, though. The keeping track of the thing was pretty funny. Sometimes it was comical. And I was like, no, look, here's my chip. And I'm like, I don't care if you have a chip there. There's eight guys at the table. They've been here all week. Yeah. And the button is in the eight seat. We know we've rotated. And he's like, yeah, I guess you're right. And then they give up. But
And the flip side, I guess, on the eight game is even though you're getting a full eight hands of each, obviously the subgames take longer in the particular blind level. So you could be there's no way to win. You know, even if you're being fair in the eight games, one rotation of the eight games could take half of the level.
Yeah. Yep.
Not more, depending on how it works out. So, but, you know, you do the best you can with it. And it's the same thing with the button nannies. You know, we started out at the beginning. They didn't give us red $5 chips, which I loved.
Yeah.
And so they made the ante games a button. If you're on the button, you had to post the antes for everyone.
Yep.
Which I thought was great, but a lot of our players at the table were complaining about, I don't understand this. Why do they got to do this? It's so confusing. And, you know, we kept saying, looking at the structure sheet, I'm like, oh, please, let's get to level 5 or 6 or whatever it is when eventually you could play, everybody can post their own ante for 25, it would make sense. Because at that point, all these people would shut up. I'm like, you know, just relax, folks. It's a little confusing, but it makes sense.
Yeah, it's only for a couple of rounds. Just relax. and it is kind of awkward when you make that switch, and it's now you have to put in a 25 chip yourself because now the amount is like, you know, 8 times 25. You know, and it's like, oh, okay, it makes sense now. But it is kind of awkward that first time, and everybody has to put an ante in. They're all like, what? And I can't tell you how many times people were like, are we anteing for the hold'em now, too? Yeah. I'm like, no, it's limit hold'em. You don't ante. But a lot of people don't know that, you know, because a lot of people don't even play those games. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, I agree with the button ante, and I think we should do that in our home game, actually. I just don't know if it's a fair way of doing it because we play for time rather than number of hands in the home game, but yeah, I love that idea because it's...
Yeah, we'll talk about it.
We'll talk about it and see if we figure it out.
And then, of course, the other point of contention, of course, is the horse tournament, so there's multiple...
There's always. Exactly.
But the clock that they used, I give them credit for it once. I understood it, how it all made sense, but maybe they explained it in the opening rules. You know, it's kind of like the flight attendants on the plane.
Yes, exactly.
How to inflate my raft. I totally tune them out.
Yep.
So maybe I missed it. But the clock was odd because they had ante and they had a number. And then they had blinds and they had two number. And then they had stakes with the two numbers, right?
Yeah.
But on the blinds, the smaller number was the bring-in for the stud games, not the small blind. Now, you can imagine how confusing this is to people when they don't announce it. So the entire first round of hold'em, or one of the rounds of hold'em, we were playing with a bring-in as the small blind at our table because that's what the clock said, even though the structure sheet said something different. That's also a problem in the pre-tournament meeting with the dealers. They should have clarified that or mentioned. So then you got a bunch of people complaining to the floor staff that the clock's wrong, and then they're running around talking to the floor staff, and the floor staff, no, that's the bring-in. I'm like, all right, that's great. Explain it, though.
And it happened to me, too. Not me, but at the table, people were constantly, you know, even the dealers were putting, you know, the bets were being put in. They didn't even, you know, change it, because it's even confusing to them. You look at that, you look up real quick, you see blinds, and you're like, okay, that's it, and then you don't, you know, it's just, it is confusing. Even when you do know what it means, you're still so, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know, but you're trained or whatever to see blinds and think, boom, that's it, and you just look up and do it. And even at the end when I was playing, I'm still looking at the clock to figure out what the hell I'm doing, and that was 13 hours playing it. So
a lot of these players...
Condition, that's the word I was thinking of, condition to do that.
Very good. But, you know, a lot of these players, if they played horse before, they probably played it online. And this was a discussion we had at our table, too. Online, you don't have to worry about anything.
Right.
You know, your blinds are posted. When you went to bet, you just click bet, and the bet's whatever you're supposed to bet. You don't have to worry about it. So, live, then you got to start thinking a lot. And so it's confusing enough for some people when you played online and you've been spoon-fed all this.
Yeah.
To keep in your mind that what the blinds are versus what the limits are, which are different. And, you know, what the ante is and the bring-in, how much it is to call to complete. And, you know, it's a confusing game. So, very interesting.
Well, I tell you what, though, what's really interesting is this next subcategory of stuff we want to talk about. Because I've never thought about this, really, and it's remarkable that it came up for you. I've never even thought about this. I think about it when it's No Limit Hold'em, but I've never thought about it this way. So why don't you talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of thinking that, you know, when I was in college, we had a great baseball program at our college, won a bunch of World Series and stuff, and the coach was legendary. And he would come in at times when you're just hanging out with him, and he would be talking about scoring the game, you know, when you're, you know, the little 3-6-7 kind of thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And at times he'd be like, "This is awesome. You've never seen this before. You know, this is what makes this game so great." And this is the same thing. There's just poker. There's just so full of things that you don't think about until they happen. And then when they happen, you could spend hours thinking about what it should be.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is what happened. Very first round of the tournament, at the table next to us, the dealer calls for the floor, right? Floor comes over, and the dealer says, player in the three seat did not raise with the nuts. And the floor goes, "Okay, sir, let me take you over here." And he's like, "Well, take me." And he was getting a massage at the time, which is even worse.
Yeah.
And they said, he's like, "What? Are we getting a warning?" He's like, "Nope, I'm going to make you comfortable over here. Your warning's going to be sitting over here for a round."
Oh, my God.
And so the people at the table were like, "Oh, my God." Because, you know, here's the thing. I mean, it was relatively recently that I actually heard about raising with the nuts, and that it's a penalty inducing thing because it's a collusion thing. You know, if you're involved in a hand with your buddy and you don't, there's no reason not to raise with the nuts.
Right. It's called the soft play rule.
Right. Right. And, but you never think of it because sometimes you're playing, you're like, you know, maybe he's not going to call me. I'll just call, you know, boom. Now you're hit with a penalty. That's harsh.
Yeah.
But that's the rule. And so the discussion kept talking about, the dealer said that one of the players that was not involved in the hand, but was concerned about this, he's like, you know, "Hey, as a player, you're responsible to know the rules of the game," which is all like, you know, driving. You know, you drive into a strange city and you get pulled over for going 27 instead of whatever, and some weird local, "Well, you know, you should have known the rules." "Well, how am I supposed to stop at the police station?" give me the booklet of the particular rules here so when I'm driving through I don't inadvertently make a mistake. So that's an issue, I think. But the funnier thing was, is this later on, of course, our table was hearing all of this.
Yeah.
And soaking it in, we got to stud high-low, and I was involved in a hand, heads-up with another player. He had a made low, and on the river, checked to me. My board had all high cards, so there's no way I could have a low.
Mm-hmm.
And so I turned over my hand. I won the high with a higher two pair than he had, and he won the low, obviously, with his made low. And people at the table, fortunately, after the chips had been pushed, so we didn't have to get into a floor ruling at the time about it, but said, you know, I'm thinking about this now. I mean, should he have bet? Because he had a made low. He knew he couldn't be beat.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, it's not the nuts. And they're like, well, no, I know it's not the nuts. It's different than that situation. But he obviously knew that he was going to win at least half the pot. So should he have not been betting? Because there's no reason for him not to bet at that point.
I tell you, I don't even know where to begin with this. I mean,
it was
really,
a fascinating question. We talked about it for like a half an hour. Eventually, I brought one of the floor guys walked by, and I grabbed him. I'm like, "Hey, hypothetical." And he started chuckling. He's like, "Hypothetical? Seriously? You've got 173 people in the tournament. You're going to ask me a hypothetical question?" Which I totally understood. But the reason I asked him was because what we saw at the last table, you're supposed to know the rules. So what I wanted to know now is, and our whole table wanted to know is, you know, hey, if the same situation comes up and I don't bet, am I going to get a penalty?
Yep.
And his answer was, "Call me over." And I'm like, that's not good. So finally at the break, you know, he came over and confided to us, and he's like, "You know what, I don't think that would be a penalty. It was the high hand and it was the nuts. You know, he had a straight flush or something, royal flush, and he didn't bet. Then that would be different, but not, well, a low hand, any low hand against a, you know, a high hand, I'm probably not going to give him a penalty."
But
probably, that was a big word.
Yeah, that's not right, though. I mean, it's not right. Just because if you know you have the best high hand and you're supposed to bet, then if you know you have the best low hand, then how could that not be the same thing? I agree. I think that it's a conundrum. I don't understand. We had to happen at my table that guys, and I actually didn't say anything, but I thought to myself, "You're crazy." But the guy was like, You know, this guy's just being a Deutsche Bank, you know, because he knows I got the high and he's got the low. And he's just, I said, well, you know what? I'm saying to myself, if it's a cash game, you may want to avoid doing that because you don't want to make the rake any bigger. So you're losing more money just because you know he's got a high and you got a low and you're trying. But in a tournament, it's all about deception in stud eight. You're trying to make him think you might have a straight if he's only got two. You need to put him to a test. That's the whole point of the game. So to not bet it and just check it down, which they did a lot. And I'm like, great, do that with me. Because I'm just going to fire into you. And I did. I kept firing into these guys with my lows.
Absolutely.
So to tell me that, you know, if I have the nuts and limit hold'em, you know, I had the ace of hearts and the five of hearts and it's an all heart board or whatever, and I have the nuts and I have to bet it, then on stud eight, then you have to tell the person who has the nut low that they have to bet it if you're heads up. I don't know. Not that I've never even thought about this, ever. Because it never comes up. To me, it's never come up. But... oh, wow, that's really weird. It is a weird situation.
A couple other interesting things about it, too, is one, the initial situation where the guy did get the penalty, that was the dealer recognizing the situation and calling the floor. No players at the table said, hey, he didn't raise with the nuts, can I have a floor decision? The dealer called for it, which I think is a whole other issue. I mean, I'm actually thankful that we have such skilled dealers that can spot that because it is a collusion thing.
Yeah.
And I want my dealers looking out for me in the game, even if it is potentially a BS situation, which that one was. I don't think anybody was complaining about anything.
Right.
But that was interesting. But then it also changed the dynamics at my table because we heard all this and we were freaked out. So I got into a hand later on as well, too, in Omaha High-Low. All high cards on the board. I was guaranteed that we both had Broadway. I would have bet my worthless little house and everything else I own. That we both had the same hand. So at the end, though, we had to keep raising each other because we didn't want to get a penalty.
Yep.
And so what we were trying to do is just make it efficient. I mean, we told the dealer, like, you know, can we just cap it without actually going through the motions of raise? And he had to slow us down and make sure we completely understood. And then we turned the cards over and he's like, you guys got the same hand. Yeah, I know we have the same hand. Everybody in the world knows we have the same hand. I just didn't want a penalty. But it did. It kind of changed the dynamic of our table, you know, listening to this, which I had never seen that in a turn before.
Yeah, I've never, you know, when you always think about soft play and betting the nuts, I always think about it and hold them. I never think about it in a split game, you know, and wow. You know, something else that really shocked me, and apparently it was, I don't know, maybe it was a per-table thing, and so it didn't circulate throughout the whole, or at least the knowledge didn't circulate throughout the whole room, but, you know, like about an hour in, I got into a hand with somebody, and we were heads up, and I'm trying to figure out which way he's going or something, and so I wanted to talk a little bit, and I said something to him, and the dealer says, you can't talk to him. I said, what do you mean? He says, you can't talk during the hand. I said, I'm in the hand. He says, yeah, but you can't talk during the hand. I said, well, we're heads up. I'm not hurting anybody else. We're talking to each other. We're in competition with each other. We're heads up. You can always talk to somebody when it's heads up. No, you can't. World Series rules. I'm sorry. Did I not watch about 45,000 hours of World Series coverage on television where every single hand they're talking to each other? I don't understand. I couldn't figure it out, and I really wanted to call a floor. And say, is this really the rule that I can't talk to this guy who I'm in a hand with heads up and it's not affecting anyone else to get some sort of reaction? Isn't that what makes it a skill, this game? I couldn't believe they wouldn't let me talk. So a little later on, a different dealer came in and someone else tried talking to someone else. And the guy, dealer said, nope, don't talk, guys. You're getting real close here. You know, I'm like, what? Really? So I didn't call a four just because of who we are. You know, I didn't want to make a big deal out of it because of who we are. So I didn't. But then I went on lunch break with our good friend Antonio, who's playing, and I told him, I said, I can't believe we can't talk. And he says, what are you talking about? That's all they're doing at my table. I said, what? So, you know, it depended on who knew the rule or who didn't know the rule or who was ignorant or whatever. And that just drove me crazy. And I really wanted to get a floor to come over and then make an announcement saying, you can't or you can, so that no one else gets that benefit at a different table. That's not right. Did they say that to you at all, or did you get to talk?
No, actually, I never encountered that, and I can't remember whether we actually had people talk. And I mean, our table was fairly friendly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I imagine there were people probably talking. Probably not in the sense of, you know, trying to get a read on it, but just, you know, talking in the middle of a hand, heads up. It probably was. I don't remember. But the issue certainly never came up.
And definitely, like, during stud eight, a guy would be like, I know you got the low. Let's, you know, and I'm like, hey, he's talking, you know, and then they cut him off, you know, and I didn't say that. I'm saying to myself, they're talking, and then a dealer would say something, and I just couldn't believe it. To me, that's the whole point of playing in the World Series, is applying your skill and trying to talk to these, not that I'm some great reader of people, but I wanted to see if this guy was going high or not, you know what I mean? And I just wanted to sort of get something out of him, and then the guy shut me up. I was like, oh, my God. I was upset about that. That was, like, my one complaint, really, other than, you know, the things we talked about a little bit earlier. But really, other than that, there was nothing to complain about. That just confused the hell out of me, though, especially when you see it on TV, you know. They did redraw, you know, you weren't around for this, but when we got to 24, they redrew three tables. And then they did it again at 18. Because that's when we got paid, 18, which to me, it makes sense when you get to 18 to redraw because, you know, now you're in the money, blah, blah, blah. But at 24, I don't know why they did it. And then they reset it at 24, which is interesting. They reset the game. So everyone started off with, I think it was Omaha 8.
Okay, I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, that makes sense.
That made sense. I don't know why it was Omaha 8, though. It should have just been Hold'em. You're starting horse, you reset it, you start with H. But anyway, they started with Omaha, I'm pretty sure, if I remember. I was pretty exhausted at the time, but it was Omaha. And then they made you play the whole round of eight hands when we got to the bubble, when the bubble finally burst, regardless. So let's say you were on hand five, and the other table was faster, and they had already played all their eight hands, and on the eighth hand, the guy bubbled.
Right.
You had to play three more hands to make sure you didn't bubble out as well.
Huh.
And I thought, I don't know. Is that right? I guess it is because that guy had to play eight hands, but they didn't have any concern with that earlier in the tournament. You know, so...
Yeah, well, I guess... Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, but you said they redrew at 24 and they started the game over at 24, right?
Yeah, they started everything over at 24.
So before the money. So at that point, theoretically, you're down to three tables, right?
Yeah, three tables.
I would think that the tables are probably more in line with what they've been playing.
Yeah,
I guess. I mean, it's possible that.
But they do make you play the entire round. So, like, and this is a funny situation, and everybody's going to make fun of me for this, but, you know, I'm just ecstatic to be cashing. And yeah. At the time, I had like 80,000 chips, and the bubble guy went out, and we had three hands left. Two hands or three hands left. So I was like, so you're telling me we have to play these hands? And he's like, yeah. I was like, all right. I looked down on the last hand. Now, obviously, it would have been impossible for me to lose all this money because I think even if we raised capped all the way, I don't think I would have lost it all. But it could have been a good 40,000 chips if I had gotten involved in this hand, and who knows what would have happened. I looked down at ace of hearts, deuce of hearts, four of spades, jack of spades. And I'm like, first to enter the pot, though. And I'm like, you know what? I'm folding. I mean, I know. Normally I would have played this a call or a raise, but I let the hand go. I'm like, why get involved in a hand here? You know, because I know I'm going to open my game up in about 5 minutes. I'm going to start playing loose and playing normally again and everything. Why get involved here and be crippled for that moment when I could take advantage of the other guys I know who are playing loose and I'm going to be able to knock out a few people or take advantage of them going all in with crap because they're forced to. Now that they're in the money, they're going to loosen up. So why not have the biggest stack that I can at that point? And I folded it. And it wasn't the nuts, so I didn't get a penalty. But really, I did. I folded ace of hearts, deuce of hearts, four of spades, jack of spades. And I kind of regret it, but at the time I was like, no, I'm in the money, I'm the glory. What'd you say?
Yeah, you probably should have.
Yeah, I should have played it.
No, you should have definitely regretted folding it.
Oh, I did. I regretted folding it. And but you know,
but no, that's an interesting point
in the moment, you know.
I mean, obviously, yeah. I mean, you know, you don't want to get crazy when you're on the bubble and somebody's already out. I mean, you're kind of you kind of pay attention to that when you're playing a no limit tournament too, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, somebody's already, like, online. You can look at the other tables. Oh, he's eliminated. All right, well, I know if I don't go out in this hand, then I'm in the money.
But it was weird. It was pretty weird just sitting there and knowing that you had to play three more hands, even though you're in the money technically right now. And then I wondered if someone did get knocked out, did they call the guy back and say, come on over, you guys went out at the same time, and now you're splitting the prize pool?
Well, it'd be the same thing, that starting with your starting chip stack, so.
Yeah. You know,
was chips at the beginning of the hand. So
but they're
I'm
at
sure
different
that,
tables. Would they have recorded how many chips he... I know, I don't remember that happening during that.
That would have to be what I would think would be the deciding factor, but I don't know.
Yeah, it was really weird. And but, you know, hey, I regret folding it now, but at the same time, I'm glad I just had a big stack to survive. Because at the time, it was 18, so I survived five more spots. you know, based on the stack I had. Who knows what would have happened? I mean, I would have won a big stack, maybe. Who knows? But I don't know. I just was so happy I was in the money for the first time with the World Series that I just like, you know, I'm just letting his hand go. I'm going to go talk to Sky, you know, and that's what I did. I ended up leaving just going and talking to you. But I don't understand why they redrew at 24. Maybe it was easier to
maybe
keep track.
Maybe it's because of that reason. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know why. But anyway, it was cool. And there were a lot of characters at this place, too.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned it was a horse tournament, so you know you're going to get a lot of characters here. But, you know, we got there early. Stretched out. I went for a little swim in the morning at the pool. I was well relaxed. Got our Denny's value slam in my belly. Still got to the poker room quite early. And so I sit down at my table. The first two people, Chris, to sit down at my table sat down in the wrong seat.
How do you do that?
I don't know, but I got up and I had to go over to right before the tournament started. I'm like, I think I'm going to like my table, buddy. People don't even know what seat to sit in. They probably are not going to understand the intricacies of Raz. And it turned out those two people were probably the two worst players at the table.
Yeah.
And of course, they both outlasted me.
Oh, man.
But there's also another guy at my table in this first seat. In the middle, as soon as we started the thing, and he's like, wow, there's 117 people, and you guys know what you're doing? He's like, hey, I'm a no-limit hold'em specialist. I'm in this tournament because I thought everybody else would be like me and just floundering around. But you guys know what you're doing. This is kind of scary. Oh, and I was just cracking up at that because, wow. Talk about the guy that just entered the wrong tournament.
Well, I had a guy the same thing at my table, but he was an older gentleman. He had to be in his 80s, okay? And it was my first table. This guy, I don't know if he didn't know what he was doing or if his concentration wasn't all there or he's got it overly excited or whatever, but when we were playing stud games, at least four times, he turned up his hand on 6th Street, thinking that the hand was over. And everyone's like, dude, and then they're all... So, you know, it's a penalty to show your cards, but no one gave this guy a penalty. Four times he did it, and no dealer said... Four penalty or one. No, he did it four times. On the fourth time, they called a four over. The four said, turn your cards up, sir. And he made him turn them up. And then they dealt the last. So everyone knew what the guy had on 6th Street. And they didn't have to turn their cards up, but he had to turn his card. So we all know that he was going for whatever he was going for. And, you know, we felt sort of bad for him, but then that's when the guy said, you know, if you do that again, we have to give you a penalty. And of course, he was knocked out a little later after that, so it didn't matter. But he gave me the most painful hand of the tournament for me, other than going on Raz. It was in stud eight, and no, I'm sorry, yeah, no, stud. I'm sorry, it was in stud, and I had like king, I had queen jack 10 to start, and my queen was the highest card showing, and it folded around to me, so I thought, all right, well, I'll try completing and either stealing, and if not, I got a pretty good starting hand, and if I pair my queen, it's probably good or whatever. So I completed, and this same gentleman called and got one other caller. So like clockwork, I get a 9, so I'm open-ended now. I got exactly what I want, and this guy had like a small heart showing. And so I said, all right, he's got to have a flush. You know, why would he be, unless he has a small pair? So I'm trying to overthink this thing like I shouldn't be. Anyway, it gets to the end. I make my straight on 5th Street. I made it already. I think it was an 8. Yeah, it was an 8. So I made it on 5th Street. I'm betting. He's calling me, and I'm like, all right, he's going for the flush. So the river gets to him, right? Now he has a pair of 5 showing. And the river, and on 6th Street, when I had bet out, he raised me. And I went, oh, my God, he's got a pair of 5s. Did he? And I said, did you make a flush? I mean, I didn't know what he made. So I'm like, all right, I call. Because there's so much money in the pot now. You know, it's 6th Street. I'm not folding. So I call. River comes. He looks at the card, and he bets. And I'm like, oh, my God. All right, I said, did you make a flush? So I call. He says, 3 5s. I go, 3 5s. I said, there's so much money in there, I have to call. He goes, 3 5s. I go, 3 5s. I got a straight. All right. I'm patting myself on my back in my head that I made a good call, that I had to call and everything. And then he's like... Like, literally, taking the cards, getting ready to muck him, and he says, oh, no, wait, I do have a flush. And, I mean, literally, the time between me saying I have a straight and then him saying I have a flush felt like 6 hours. you know, realistically, it was probably like 15 seconds, which is forever. But, you know, and cards speak for themselves. They turn them up. You know, the dealer's supposed to show the best hand anyway. But just to say three fives, thinking he has three fives, and I've got the win, that's like, at that time, it was like a 12,000 pot at the time. It was huge. And I thought I was raking that in. And all of a sudden, I'm not. And it was, I was like, oh, my God, that was devastating. I couldn't let that go in my head for, like, until stud eight was over. And we started in stud with that hand. So, I mean, that's how long it took me to get over that. I was so upset. And I shouldn't have been that way. And I finally ended up getting a big hand on this guy and knocking him. I didn't knock him out, but I crippled him. He was knocked out on the next hand. He made a flush, and I made a boat on the end in one hand. And so I knocked him out. And so I felt bad, you know, because he really was out of his element, you know, obviously turning up. But to do that to me, oh, my God, it's so brutal. And that's one of the things where, you know, he really didn't know what was going on around him, and he didn't even recognize his own hand. That's what was so brutal about it. You don't even know what you have, and you beat me. Oh, brutal.
Wow, wow. Well, you know, I also had a guy at my table that I like to call Mr. Miserable.
Did you call him that to his face?
I should have. I really did. He was right next to me. He sits down. He got there late, which I appreciate because, you know, we had carved up a lot of his chips. But it had an old sinus thing going on.
Oh, yeah.
So the entire time it was like... And every rotation or so, he'd get up and get a napkin and blow his nose, which would be just as bad. But, you know, hey, you're sick, whatever. You know, you're going to play the tournament, I get it. But he'd be one of these, like, low talkers. At the end of the hand, I'm like, yeah, great. You had to draw two outs. Way to go, buddy. Nice hand. We did do it. But I could hear him all right, and I think it was just loud enough that the person that he was trying to egg on could hear him too.
Yeah.
But then he would do the exact same thing to the same guy two hands later and just happily scooping the chips. Oop, he got his three-outer. And, you know, I just get tired of these people that think they know it all and berate players at the table for their play but aren't honest enough to say, oops, yeah, got lucky on that one.
Yeah.
Oh, but he was just Mr. Miserable the whole time. Everything was wrong. Yeah, I don't like the eight games. I don't like the 40-minute level. I don't like Mubarak. You know. Dude, you know, it's poker. Have fun.
Well, I know that the complete opposite of Mr. Miserable is Nolan Dalla.
Yes.
Who is like the media, the head of the media and of all the World Series stuff. And sometimes he has underlings doing it for him in other places. But basically, he's the guy that controls all the little stories and write-ups and news that you're going to find out about it. And just an incredibly, fantastically upbeat gentleman that we've always talked to. He's always been very kind to us and me, especially when I'm emailing him for some annoying reason for, you know, our magazine for, you know, the results or something. And he's always been, you know, very generous with his time. And you got to talk to him. So that's going to be really cool for next week, right?
Yeah, it was a real good interview. I think it was insightful. I asked him about a wide range of things. And he's not one to hold back on his opinions. So we'll put that on next week's show, and I think people are going to enjoy it.
This is Joe Seabock, and you're listening to Any Up.
We're going to put on each other's hats. And of course, now the hat's not going to fit me. It's going to be way too big.
Have we sprayed you for lice lately?
But since you're, you know, I always consider you the better limit hold'em player in our game. You know, I think of our home game, if anyone's going to go for advice about limit hold'em, it'd be you. So I had a limit hand that I thought was real interesting that I wanted to talk to you about. And I felt like it was worthy of the hand of the week. So you're going to have to give me that swag, otherwise I'm going to call you an angle shooter. So.
You called me worse.
But I'll set up a situation for you. Of course, I said it's limit hold'em in our horse tournament. The blinds at this time were 1,500 and 3,000. Were you around at that point?
No.
Okay. I had 38,000 in chips, and the only stacks at my table that were bigger were the two guys on my right. All right? They each had about 60,000, so it was pretty significant. The biggest stack of the two was on the button, and so, of course, the other stack, obviously, was in the small blind, while I'm in the big blind in this hand.
If folds, you can't go broke here in the big stack.
Yeah. it folds around to the button, and he, just to give you a little precursor of what this guy was like, he'd been stealing a little bit but pretty much from all positions. But he two bet like he's supposed to, and would also two bet, you know, post flop bets, you know, like in other words, trying to, mm-hmm. you know, whether it was staving off a free card or whatever. But he was known to two bet and to steal. He makes it 6,000, and I also did have a pretty tight image, so he could have been just thinking to take the hand away from me because I did have a tight image. I think I definitely don't splash around when I play horse. The small blind calls because he can afford it, and I have two black kings.
Mm-hmm. Fold.
Yeah. I wish I had known that earlier.
You're about 100 from the bubble. You don't want to take a chance.
The pot is currently 15,000, and I have three invested. What do you do?
You have to raise.
Okay, you have to raise.
Have to cap it with kings.
Okay. Actually, I'm not allowed to cap it because I can only make it three bets. But,
no,
all right,
what I'm saying is I'm going to keep betting until it's capped.
Yeah, okay. So I actually thought for a moment about just calling to disguise my hand and wait till the turn to spring it on them.
Well, you're never going to cash in a horse event playing that way, buddy.
But these two guys were really aggressive. So I knew if I raised, I'd probably get at least one call and maybe even get it to cap, like thinking like you're thinking. So I did raise.
Limit's a game I don't like to get too tricky in, even against aggressive players. I mean, some people might say, they're aggressive. I'm going to trap them here. But, you know, so much can happen in limit.
Yeah.
You know, flop comes. I mean, again, it's just a couple bets to get to the river.
Yeah.
So at that point, I'm gonna get the money in, as much money as I can get in with the best hand. And when I got kings, I got to think that I got the second best hand that's possible. And if somebody has aces, you know, well, Ricky Tikki Tavi. But no, I'm raising kings all the way until I can't raise anymore.
I did worry a little bit that if I raise and got called by the button, because I knew he was going to call me, that the small blind would be priced in to call regardless of his holding. But then I thought, if I don't raise, he's still in the hand. Yeah. So then I said, you know, I'm just trying to think it out because I'm not a limit player per se. So I was trying to think it out, but I said, no, I have to raise here. So I did raise. The button calls.
What you're hoping is you raise, and then the button re-raises. And maybe the small blind decides to get out of the way.
Yeah, and all these things were going through my head, and it all happened like in a matter of like 5 seconds. So it wasn't like I was sitting there for an hour contemplating and then raising because I would have given away my hand. But I mean, I did look at the kings before an action got to me, so I started thinking about how I was going to play before it even got to me. So I did raise and made it 9K, and they both called. No re-raising. So we're three-handed, and the pot's 27,000. Okay. Flop comes 9-7-4 rainbow. And the small blind checks. Obviously, what do you do?
Fold.
You fold, yeah.
No, you absolutely got to bet here.
Right, you bet. So I bet the button calls, and the small blind calls. So that's another 9K. The pot is 36,000 chips. Now, at this point, what are you thinking? Anything? Are you saying
it's 9-7-4 again?
9-7-4 rainbow, and I put it in the right order. You'll notice.
Yes, very well. Dave from San Jose appreciates that. He doesn't have to pull over. No, at this point, I mean that's a beautiful flop. I can't imagine anybody even has a pair right now. So you know, unless you're up against the aces, which you're not because it wasn't capped. You know, you got the best hand here, so now you just got to fade an ace for the most part.
Okay.
You know, it's going to be unlikely that a flush gets there. Straight is real unlikely, even if it gets there. I'm loving this. I'm jamming all the way to the end.
Okay.
Unless
all right.
An ace comes.
Right. So the pot's 36,000. I've gotten two callers. The turn is a five. Now, the five puts two suits on the board. I think they were hearts, but they might have been. Might have been diamonds. I really don't remember what it was. But
so it doesn't matter to me right now.
It really doesn't matter at this point. But it was two suits on the board. And I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, well, the unlikely straight got there and it got checked to me. So I bet again?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Pedal to the metal.
I bet 6,000.
Damn Shagar in this hand.
I did bet. I bet 6,000. Button calls and now the small blind check raises.
Excellent.
To 12,000.
Re-raise.
Okay, so you're saying re-raise. The pot at that point was six.
It could be a set is the only other thing that's likely. You know, maybe he was, if he had nines, he was laying in wait. Or you know, a set on the flop, maybe he was laying in wait to catch up with you because he knew it was a really dry board and didn't have to worry about getting pipped.
Now, that's a multi-way pot, though. It's not just me he's dealing with, though. Does he does he really have
just
nines?
That, I'm, No, I meant a set of nines.
Oh, a set of nines. Yeah, okay.
But even then, you're right. You want to get the money in when you can. So, no, I'm still not worried. I'm gonna raise one more time here.
Okay. The pot at that point was 60,000.
Particularly because he's an aggressive player, you said, right?
Yeah, they both were aggressive. At that point, the pot was 60,000, giving me 10-1 on my call.
Right.
My stack was 25,000. And I have to tell you that I folded.
You folded?
I did. I folded.
Wow.
I just got this feeling that I was behind either a set. Could have been aces, but then I said no because, like you said, they weren't capped. So I really felt it was two pair or aces. And because that guy was in the small blind, I felt like he could have had two pair here. He could have had any two cards at that point because, one, we was aggressive. Two, he was loose. Three, he could afford it. And four, he was priced in at that point when I raised preflop and it got back to him for only 1,500 more or 3,000 more, I mean. So by the time it got back to him, you know what I'm saying? It was only 3,000 more to call to win.
Well, if he had two pair, it'd have to be nines and sevens because no other two pair would make sense to call a raise with.
Okay.
9-7, you might take a shot, and you know maybe if you hit the unlikely straight draw or something, then you can do it if you're an aggressive player. But that would be the only thing. But even then, even aggressive players, I don't think play 9-7 in a small blind in a raised pot.
A set? Does a set come to mind?
At this
like
point,
sevens?
A set is the only thing I'm worried about. But here's the thing about this is that, all right, so, I mean, you could call here. I could definitely defend calling and then check calling the river. And then you're only up for two bets unless the button gets frisky. So that's probably fairly safe. But I think the value is in raising. Then you'll call two more bets there if he caps it. At which point you know you're drawing to a king probably, but you're still going to have to call the bet on the river now. So really, you're only calling three more bets. So
okay, wait, can I
two bets to three bets?
Let me interject here. You have to remember that I'm the sandwich. I'm the meat in this aggressive sandwich right now. Now that he's check raised, if I call, I don't know what the button is going to do now, and I can get whipsawed is what I'm thinking. And then on the river, if he bets and I call again. Well, if he bets on the river again and I call and the button's still in the hand because he called before or raised, now it's costing me way more than two or three bets. It could cost me a total of six bets.
You're only putting one bet in on the river unless you hit a king.
Okay, so if the small blind bets out and I call and the big blind now, I mean the button raises, I'm folding?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Let's say that you, regardless, we get to the river, right?
Right.
All right, and the small blind bets, at that point, because he check raised you, I'm just going to call there. So now, you know, maybe the button could raise there, and then the small blind re-raises, or it's a small, you know, you're not going to call two bets cold with just pocket kings at the end.
Okay.
So you're going to fold there, legitimately. If it's just one bet to you, then you could think about folding, but it's going to be kind of ridiculous at that point to fold for one more bet. So it's not like No Limit where. So they could push the whole stack in and really push you to a test. I mean, it's only going to cost you, at most, this hand, is going to cost you four bets.
Okay, so,
it's
okay.
Unlikely. It's
going
to be like three bets. I think going into this, there's no way I'm putting more than three bets into this hand.
Okay, so at that point, you say it's three bets, right? Now, again, I don't know. This is still the turn now. I don't know what the button's going to do. But okay, so let's say it's three bets. Three bets is 18,000. I have 25,000. I could literally be down to 7,000 after starting with almost 40,000.
But
with
the only thing that makes sense in this hand is a set. I'm not saying you shouldn't be scared of it, but it just doesn't seem right to me.
Okay.
I'm just not smelling it.
Okay. Well, when I was sitting there, the kid was reeking, so I smelled it. Is what I'm saying. I felt in my heart that I was beat, and I just felt like if I'm beat. And I want to try to get to cheap as possible. I don't know what this button has, and I can get whipsawed here. So what I ended up doing was folding. The button calls. The river is an ace. Doesn't complete any draw, you know, the flush draw or anything, but it was like the ace of spades. And the small blind bets. The river calls. And now I'll let you decide what do you think the small blind had?
I'm going to say maybe like an ace queen or something.
Okay, no, the small blind had 9-7. You had it right earlier.
9-7, yeah. Yep. Hmm.
He flopped the top two, and I don't know what the button had. I think he mucked when he saw the hand. He might have had something like ace queen or something. I don't know. But, yeah, so even the ace would have scared the hell out of me in the end. I probably would have lost to the ace, too. But,
yeah, but see, at that point, you can shut down with the ace.
Yeah.
Particularly if the button's still in, because now you're up against two people.
Right.
And you don't have the best pair anymore, at least. But, well, I mean, you save money that way, but, you know, I think it would have been unlikely. And I'm willing to take that shot because it's limited. My risk is muted there. And nothing really made sense. I mean, a 9-7... is one of the possibilities, but it didn't make sense to me. So.
Yeah, and I wasn't sure that it was two pair, but it just felt so much like a set to me that one of these guys either raised on the button with a pair or called in a small blind with a small player hoping to check raise the button. And then when I came along and raised, then the guy's like, oh my God, now I have to call and try to hit a set to bust this guy. Right. And again, even though you said that you're limited to how much you can lose, if I did have to pay three more bets, I was going to be all the way down to 8K or 7K. And for me, 7K when the blinds are 1,500 and 3,000.
Yeah, no, I would not say it wouldn't be devastating, but I think you know, you're doing your calculations of risk versus reward there, and I'm not going to get bullied off a hand that I think that I have the best hand. I mean, think about this too. I mean, he had nines and sevens.
Right.
On your river, you weren't drawn to just a king at that point.
No, I know, but I didn't know that. You know what I mean? There's
you had six other cards too that could have helped you. But and then, like I said, if a scare card comes, then you don't have to put in those last bets. Right. So
well, the other thing too is that, and I've thought this out. I thought about what you said about making a better two pair. But first of all, I don't know if that's what he has. But if I do put him on that hand, how do I know what the two pair are? If the seven pairs, and I'm thinking, oh, now I've got kings and sevens.
Yeah, but you don't have to figure that out. You know
what I mean? No, you can't. But, so that's why I keep counting that as
outs. You're not going to raise on the river with anything except for a king at that point.
Okay.
I mean, on the river, you have just a pair, and it's probably still good, but you're not going to value bet just a pair of kings, particularly when you got check raise on the turn. So on the river, it's check call.
Okay, so you're thinking that, or we'll call.
If you check call, and then it's raised by the button, and then re-raised, then you're definitely folding, because there's no way your kings are good.
Yeah.
And if it's raised by the button, I still got to think that my kings aren't good, so I might throw it away for that last bet, particularly because you're chip stacking what you're talking about.
Right.
But otherwise, you know, I mean, that's a lot of ifs to get to that point. At this point, I'm just now, I mean, if we played it my way, I would have raised and I would have got capped, obviously, because the guy has two pair.
Right.
And we don't know what the other guy had, so maybe he got out of the way. I don't know. But on the river, then he's going to bet out at you with an ace, and I'm definitely folding at that point.
Okay.
Saving the bet, because at that point, the guy's already showed aggression. He could have me beat, or he's just making a play on me. If he's making a play on me, I got another player in the hand with that potentially has an ace. Boom, gone.
Yeah. Well, I never got to the river.
I still would have put two bets in.
I never got to the river because I just didn't count. I didn't put him on. I put him on a set. Was where I put him on. I said he could have 9-7. I thought, in a way, I thought he could have 9-7. Those were the only two hands I thought was a set of fours, set of sevens. I didn't think a set of nines because he definitely would have raised preflop with nines, maybe not sevens, maybe not fours, but when the button raised, he would have made it three bets, I think, to me, which would have been ideal if he had pocket nines at the time, I'm thinking, but he didn't have that. So I'm like, okay, he doesn't have a set of nines here, but he could easily have a set of fours. The hand I actually put him on was a set of fours because he would have played it perfectly. It's a very dry board for a set of fours. He's hoping I have kings or aces when I make that. So a perfect situation would be to call with fours, hit your set, then get a few bets in, and then when it gets double on the turn, it's a check, right. Let us both bet and call, and then raise to get a ton of money. I put him on fours and said, I'm beat, and I folded. And that's the way I went in my head, and it turns out I was beat, but it was 9-7. And when we folded, I turned to him and I said I had kings. And he goes, wow, that's hard to lay down. He said, that's a great lay down. And I said, well, I mean, the way you played it, I thought you had a set. And he said, yeah, you know, I got frisky with the 9-7. He said, but he said, it's exactly, you know, it's exactly what I thought I hoped you had was kings. Because I wanted to try to get a lot out of you. And he said something like, you know, but you're a better player than that. I'm, you know, whatever. And I was like, oh, thanks, but it doesn't help me anymore. I still lost 15K in this hand or whatever it was. So, but
well,
I saved a bunch of chips.
The absolute minimum on
that. Yeah, okay. So that's cool. That made me feel good then. I lost the absolute minimum. But If I had played it your way, you know, it probably would have been the right way, but I would have lost.
It's probably debatable whether my way is the right way in the end, but I'm just not going to be scared of sets. I mean, they happen so infrequently.
Yeah.
And because it's limit, my risk is reduced.
Right.
No limit, then, you know, he could come out and fire for 100K on the river, and then I'm put to a test. But it's a limit. He can only put one bet in.
All right. Well, if I was an LTL FTC, what would you have given me?
I would have been happy to give you a deck of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Annie Up, now available in the Annie Up store at antiupstore.com. But instead, I'm just going to keep them for myself.
Roll around in them, baby. Try to cover up those naughty places. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.